now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Jim Hansen, and this segment we'll be talking with Joseph Heumeier, Executive Director at the Center for a Secure Free Society. And Joseph, I wanted to focus a little bit closer to home, but on some things that I think have international implications, but a little more locally focused. Our good friends 90 miles from Key West in Cuba, the Castro brothers, are, I guess, on their last legs. They seem to have been on their last legs forever. It would be nice if they would both just keel over and die. But in the last, you know, gasps of that regime, there seems to be a lot of outreach. Obviously, Obama normalized relations with them, and they are making a lot of friends around the world and trying to increase trade. The French seem to be doing some new trade relation discussions with them. But if you look at that regime and overall the chances for anything other than more badness coming out of a transition, what do you see?
Well, first of all, Jim, thanks for the invitation. It's always a pleasure to be on. It's a good point. I think what we're talking about here is signaling. And the Obama rapprochement with the Castros in Cuba, which is a 50-year-old communist dictatorship on the island, as you said, you know, just miles off the coast of Florida, it really sent a signal internationally that it's okay to do business with Cuba. Not that other countries haven't done business with Cuba in the past, because granted, the only country that's embargoed them is the United States. So they've been doing business with Canada, Europe, for years, but open diplomatic relations and just kind of a greater sense of ability to reach out. Now, you posed a good question, which, you know, is this just normal diplomatic relationships that are trying to be built or perhaps strengthened, or could it be more nefarious objectives? Well, the Castros, because they've been living underground, they've been living within informal economies and many times illicit economies over the last several years because of their underperforming society. They basically bank on a lot of illicit networks. So I would pay special attention to some of the countries that they reach out to. And if they're trying to take these illicit networks and formalize them because they have more legitimacy. As you mentioned, you know, the Castros have been, you know, it's often talked about in Washington about we need a new policy with Cuba, that we can't be stuck in the Cold War. But the only person or the only entity that's stuck in the Cold War is Cuba. I mean, it literally is the same people from the Cold War that are governing that country. And so, you know, we're not going to see many different intentions and motivations behind the Cuban government because it's the same people have the same mindset that are running the country.
Well, I would like to think that, I don't know, is there any chance for a popular re-revolution, de-revolution? You know, I mean, the people have been oppressed for so long. Anytime any sort of, you know, democratic or different type of cultural or political movement comes into play, they crush it in the old school Cold War way. So is there any chance that can change? I mean, with the death of the two leaders, or is somebody else just going to step in?
I mean, I always like to stay optimistic, and it's, you know, it's always hard to predict these kind of things and predict the future. But I mean, I think oftentimes in Washington, we try to overestimate our ability to control the outcome of certain countries and certain regions and their internal affairs. And perhaps we think that, you know, I think I even heard the administration say this in one of the press releases, that they think that this kind of relationship with Cuba may open the door for civil society and other elements to empower themselves and perhaps spark some kind of democratic revolution. Unfortunately, we haven't seen any evidence that about a year out from the new diplomatic rekindling of relationships. And I think we underestimate the ability that the Cuban government has to control its populace. I mean, they've been doing this for a long time, and they've increasingly gotten better. And I'd say perhaps they're one of the best in the world, and best in the kind of quotations, in the ability to repress civil society, political opposition, human rights groups, and basically just be able to quell any dissent on the island. I mean, they teach other countries how to do this. So they're like the trainer of trainers to some degree of be able to have internal population control. And so I sometimes think that we overestimate our ability to change that with the U.S. policy. I don't think there's anything that the U.S. policy can do to change that. I think that's something that only can be changed with regime change.
We're talking with Joseph Heumeier, and I want to shift gears back to an area that everyone seems to be focused on because it's a mess, but that seems to be moving some of the interest into our hemisphere. And that's specifically Turkey and Iran. obviously, both are deeply involved in the problems in Iraq, Syria, and in that region as a whole, but both are also deeply involved in our hemisphere. You know, obviously, the Iranians had involvement in the bombing of the Jewish Cultural Center. They have had Hezbollah ties and have done a number of other things. So we have a legitimate concern with them. But apparently the Turks now seem, under, you know, Erdogan, to be moving into the Latin America sphere as well. Tell us a little bit about what they're up to.
Well, I mean, you said it correctly in the sense that the Iranians have had the longest, most strongest presence in Latin America over time. They've been, say, give or take, it goes back to at least 30, 35 years since the dawn of the revolution in Iran, really, that they've been able to establish their foothold in south of the U.S. border. I think it's really within the last few years, say the last 5-6 years, that the rest of the Muslim world has started to pay attention to that. In the past, it was very quiet. It was, you know, it was a presence that wasn't necessarily promoted too heavily within the Middle East. However, in the last few years, Iran, especially under the tenure of the last president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, has made it his business to kind of project its image of they're not isolated internationally and they have friends in far places, particularly pointing to particular leaders in Latin America. Well, the rest of the Middle East had paid attention. Turkey under Erdogan, I think, is one of those that has started to look at Latin America and seeing what kind of opportunities exist for it in the Western Hemisphere. But also Saudi Arabia, Egypt, other countries have started to pay more attention to Latin America. And I think it has to do with fundamentally two things. One is the propagation of their version of Islam. So, you know, Sunni is more predominant in the Middle East and is more predominant in Latin America as well. The most Muslim populations, as small as they may be in particular countries, or as large as they may be in places like the tri-border area in South America, are largely Sunni-dominated populations. Yet the Iranians have been the first to show up, so they've been able to take these Sunni populations and kind of move them more into their geopolitical orbit. Now, I'm sure like countries like Saudi Arabia don't take that too lightly. So they kind of trying to move in and trying to, you know, push that back towards their favor. So that's the first thing, I think, is trying to determine the likelihood of the growth of these Islamic communities in Latin America. And the second is, I think, geopolitical posturing. Iran has basically been able to turn Latin America into one of its probably preferred regions and priorities in its foreign policy. And so they have a lot of influence in that region, more than we like to give it credit for. And as the Middle East plays out and the balance of power plays out in the Middle East, other countries are realizing that if you just concentrate yourself within your near abroad, you lose that international legitimacy that Iran's been able to build, and you get less powerful at home. And so I think some of the leaders are following in the footsteps.
Here's what scares the bejesus out of me. We've got a Sunni-Shia proxy war going on in Iraq and Syria. We've got a Sunni-Shia proxy war going on in Yemen. If there is jockeying for position between Iran and potentially Turkey and the Gulf Arab states for Sunni versus Shia dominance in our hemisphere, in Latin America, you know, South America, and if it filters it all our direction, that's a recipe for potential disaster. Is there a chance that could be part of the play?
Yeah, that's a good point. There's potential spots in Latin America that I think are largely ignored and we don't fully understand the level of Islamic penetration. I point to particularly South America. Venezuela, for instance, has a high level of the growth of the Islamic population, not in terms of necessarily just raw numbers, but the level of influence, their ability to go within the government, to have pressure groups and lobbying groups, and kind of just change the tide of the country towards, what we're seeing in the Middle East, towards more Islamic doctrine and Sharia law. There's an effort to do that. That could be a potential, you know, midterm outcome where you see a jockeying for power in the Middle East on between Islamic powers. And that would obviously spell quite a disaster in a country like Venezuela, where there already is a lack of governance, or I'd say more like a lack of state control over certain things because the country just is spiraling into anarchy. That could spell into some other kind of proxy war.
Joseph Heumeier, Executive Director at the Center for a Secure Free Society, thank you so much for your insights into both of those issues. Coming up next, we will talk with the Center for Security Policy's own Fred Flights. This is Jim Hansen, and you're listening to Secure Freedom Radio.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.